the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio. It's science and technology that's accessible and entertaining, and if we can understand it, so will you. This morning, Katie Mullally and I speak with Wisdom 2.0 founder Soren Gordhammer. He's a pioneering force in bringing modern technology, bridging modern technology with ancient wisdom. He's written a new book about it. It's called The Essential, Discovering What Really Matters in an Age of Distraction. Then orthopedic surgeon Dr. Safa Kassab, who performs total knee replacements guided by new augmented reality device, making for more precise and accurate surgery. Dr. Kassab joins us in the second half of the hour. That's all coming up on Cool Science Radio. Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Katie Mullally. Our next guest is Wisdom 2.0 founder Soren Gordhammer. Soren has been a pioneering force in bridging modern technology with ancient wisdom, demonstrating how we can live mindfully in today's fast-paced world while leveraging technology for the greater good.
As both an early investor in OpenAI and Anthropic, and through his experience teaching meditation and mindfulness to a diverse range of people, Soren Gordhammer believes that the key to engaging wisely with technology is reconnecting with our inherent natural intelligence. He joins us today to discuss his new book called The Essential, Discovering What Really Matters in an Age of Distraction. Soren, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thank you so much. And that was a beautiful introduction. I think that's one of the best ones I've heard. So thank you for that very heartful introduction.
You're welcome. And as I was reading it, I was thinking, this is so refreshing. And yet it feels like it has escaped us all, embracing our inherent natural intelligence as we turn more to depending on technology. AI is both a useful and wonderful thing. At the same time, it's scary, and it makes us feel as though we've lost our sense of self a little bit, I think.
I think that's a great way of presenting it. I think the technology is already here. So people are like, well, I don't really want to use AI. I'm like, every time you open up your email, an AI has scanned every email and decided what is spam, what is worth for you to read. Anytime you go on to the internet, there's ads that you're seeing. Those are all AI. The AI is determining based on everything that it's ever known about you, you know, what ad or what post is kind of best for you to view. So it's all around us. And I think the biggest danger we have, well, there's a lot of dangers we have, from killer robots to, diseases that bad actors create, you know, with AI. But I think that one of the biggest ones is simply that we get kind of lost in this world of continually needing all this new content and absorbed, and who just ate this dinner on social media, or who just went to this great town on social media, or who's kind of more beautiful on social media. And we forget, like, is that really how I want to spend the limited heartbeats that I have here on this life? So my book is try to be like a sharing with people about my own journey to try to discover what actually matters and to live from that. And that doesn't mean we don't use the technology at all, of course. Like, there's incredible benefits, but it means that we're attuned to our North Star. And when we're on our deathbeds and we're looking back at our life, how much of it is it going to matter that, like, oh, we liked that post, or like we read that article, or how much of it is going to matter, like, oh, I learned the things that really were of value to me, and I showed up for my friends, I showed up for my family, I kind of followed my heart. And so if technology can help us do all those things, they're amazing. But what the danger I see today is we just kind of get lost, and the algorithms and the AI just kind of keep us lost. And it's better to wake up now than to wake up on our deathbed. So the book is kind of an invitation, like, no judgment on any of it, but like, how do we want to live and how does technology serve us? And I fortunately had the chance, you know, to talk to all the AI leaders and the tech leaders. So I know kind of a little bit of their perspective, and they're not bad or mean or like nefarious, or at least most of them. But there's still a way that we can all get wrapped up in this system. And I think at the end of the day, you know, what really matters is a super important question to ask.
Well, for our listeners who do not know what Wisdom 2.0 conference is, this is your baby. You founded this. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I like to say it founded me. I was just living my life and an idea comes and it just seems like for whatever reason, I'm the best person or the person who has his antenna open enough to hear the call. So the realization I had, Lynn, was, about 20 years ago, I knew technology was going to get cooler and faster and advance in all these amazing ways. What I didn't know is whether the internal technologies of well-being, of compassion, of wisdom, of mindfulness, would those increase as the technology increases? Or as the technology increases, would those get kind of squashed? Would we become a culture that was more and more connected, but also more and more miserable and isolated and anxious and depressed? And I thought, we need to talk about this. Like, how do both of these accelerate and not just have one of them accelerate? And I think, our grade is a little bit uncertain in terms of like technology's done all these great things for us. It's helped us share information. It's helped us with commerce. It's helped us with news. But it hasn't really helped us with our well-being. The iPhone comes out, the internet comes out. And now we have the power of AI. And so the conference really brings together all the best leaders in tech, all the best leaders in wellness and wisdom to look at if we can marry these two worlds so that we create a world that we want to live in, that our children want to live in, their grandchildren want to live in. And that world has technology in it, but it's just not a bunch of algorithms and digital friends. And like, that scares me. And so for 20 years, we've been exploring how we can marry these worlds and have a world that's both internet connected and technological connected, but also like deeply human connected.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Wisdom 2.0 founder Soren Gordhammer. He is also the author of the new book, The Essential, Discovering What Really Matters in an Age of Distraction. Well, Soren, let's talk about this potential marrying of the two technologies, because this distraction started way before AI. I mean, the minute the cell phones came out, especially with the smartphones, we've been distracted. How do you see the two coming together short of another mindfulness app, which is still another moment that we're on our phone trying to not be distracted?
Well, there are new phones. For example, there's a light phone, which is like a different version of a phone that has certain components, but it doesn't have all the social media components. So I do think more and more devices will be created that gives us an option of like, how much do we want to be, digitally connected? There's also an app I have called Opal, which actually does not allow me to check certain apps throughout the day. They're both actually investments from our Wisdom Ventures Fund, but I can set it for all day long and I just don't have access and I can override that, but it's a process to override it. So I do think there's certain technologies that are trying to come together to prevent us from technology. So I think it's two parts. One is just us carving the time out and saying, you know what, for the first hour of the day, I'm not going to look at my phone. I'm going to connect with my heart. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to do these things. And I'm just going to be in the analog natural world and see what that's like. There's these retreats now that people do that cost a lot of money. And you go and you put your phone away for the weekend and you just talk to people, just like old times. It's just like, that's kind of crazy when you think about it. Like, go to a retreat, put away your phone. No, there's no special teachings or special anything. It's just like, you just get to live as we lived, back in the day. And so I do think that part of it is up to us to like, we have to set those guidelines and say the last hour, the first hour, there's these breaks where it's just like, I just need some space. And then I think there needs to be a new technology that emerges that supports us in doing those. And I think the ad-based model is, it works in certain situations and it's also challenging in other situations. And there'll be more subscription-based models, I think, increasingly happening, like YouTube has, where you kind of get the information you need in a more direct way. So I think both of those will happen. But I think, for somebody listening to this, my biggest encouragement is just like, carve out some time for yourself every day. You don't have to meditate. You don't have to cross your legs in lotus posture. It's just like, this time is for you to listen, to go for a walk, to be in nature, to maybe even connect with a friend. But it's just so, so important. And if you look at the studies on loneliness and isolation, it's really human connection that matters. Like, And this it's great to be on Zoom. It's great to be on a phone call. So anything that if great to see somebody in person, like anything we can do that kind of builds that human connection, I think is really the secret of life. And even if you want to live longer, longevity, you know, longevity is so much about purpose and people. And I think part of the reason I wrote the book is like it's a balance. I feel like we swayed way too far on the tech will satisfy all of our needs side, and much less on like, oh, human connection, human presence, human love. Like that side, I feel like doesn't have a good PR. It needs better PR.
Well, let's also talk about the side of human that we call it natural intelligence. And I think we've lost so much of our own natural intelligence, our own natural inquisitiveness, because we're all of the age that we remember pre-Google, where if you had a question about something, you got to sit and ponder and wonder and see if you could find the answer on your own. So tell us about natural intelligence, and is technology truly just sucking it out of us, or is it atrophying within us?
It's beautiful. You know, some people call it intuition. Some people call it, you know, by different names. But I think inherently in each one of us, there's this sense of knowing. Now, there might be a problem we don't know. For example, you know, how far is it to the city? Like, so we look up that information. But there's a lot of questions that, like, what is the purpose of your life? How do you spend your day? We all have limited heartbeats here on the planet. We never know when those heartbeats are going to end, but we know at some point they're going to end. How do I want to spend those questions? As you mentioned, those are deep, profound questions that don't really have, like, a set answer. They're, like, requires us to really, really listen. And I think one of the things that's happened is we're constantly looking outside of ourselves for answers. And we just get in the habit of, if I have a question, somebody has the answer. ChatGPT has the answer, or Claude has the answer, or the internet has the answer. And so I think two things kind of get lost in that. One is the value of friends, where we actually connect with a friend as, hey, can you go for a walk? I'm exploring this question. I just love your thoughts on it. They generally don't give us an answer, but they create a container for us, a loving container for us just to kind of be in that question. And the second thing is we lose contact with that intuitive voice inside ourselves. It's just like, you know what? I don't care what the internet says or what AI says. Like, here's what feels right to me. And I worry about a world where we lose that capacity to say, I know all this information is coming at me, and yet I know how to tap in, and I knew how to listen to my instincts. And it's so interesting because if you look at the greatest entrepreneurs, the greatest wisdom teachers, they all had this capacity. They all had this capacity to tune in. I'm like, this makes sense to me. It may not make sense to the outer world. The outer world might have completely different values, but this makes sense to me, and how do I follow that? And I think, if I can bring anything from the book, it was like, let's not lose that and let's make space for that. And actually the most profound things come from that space. And they come from that deep listening and then bringing that out into the world. So I'm glad you asked about that, because I think this innate human intelligence that we have, it's like a muscle, and people are like, well, I don't know. I don't understand. Where's mine? I don't really know what to do. Which is totally understandable, but we can begin to foster that and harness that and develop that. And I actually think there's amazing business applications and life applications when we begin to tap into that. But it requires, like, you're looking outside, like, where is it? Where is it? It's like, oh, I have to look inside. And so for me, it's like, that's really the secret. And I've met so many crazy entrepreneurs and so many crazy successful people. Not you would do this to be that, but most of them have had this like real, just like innate intuitive knowing, and they trust it.
Yeah. I just got back from a family event, you know, nephew's graduation, and we were sitting around the dinner table afterwards, and someone said, okay, you can't ask Siri, but, and someone posed an actual question they were wondering about, which was, how do you correctly use a bidet? And because no one grabbed their phones, the conversation became so lively and creative and hilarious about, you know, and there were these offshoot tangents about what a bidet could actually be. And it kind of made me think that with your book, Soren, that this is the kind of thing that you're suggesting. And I'm wondering if there are like specific exercises that you suggest along these kinds of lines.
Yeah. And you know, there's one that people use where you go out for dinner and you put your phones on the table, you stack your phones on the table and you put them on airplane mode. And the person who picks up their phone the first, you know, pays for dinner, which is kind of a fun, creative way of supporting it. I think we don't want to demonize phones or demonize tech or demonize any of it. It's just more like carving out space. And I think, you know, friends that are going for walks and they're just saying, hey, let's go for a walk and we're not going to be on our devices. And there's some kind of human contact with that, because I think one of the kind of challenges things is, if you take something away, what are you replacing it with? So you guys took away access to your phone, but you replaced it with people, coming up with this really great conversation. So I do think one of the things to explore is like, all right, if I'm not going to like look at my phone for this hour or 2 hours, what are the things that I can replace that with that which feel very nourishing to me? And I think that one of the ways that I look at it is, what is life giving and what is life taking? So you might be like, well, I like being on Instagram or TikTok, but you'll probably notice like after an hour, there's some point where it shifts. It goes from kind of interesting and cool, I'm getting updates to my friends, I watch some interesting videos. And then there's this turn where it starts to drain our life energy. And so when people tell me, well, like, how much time should I spend on social media? I'm like, if you pay attention, usually there's a moment where it goes from like getting the updates you want to more of an addictive dopamine hits. And that's the moment to be conscious of and to realize, oh, now it's turned into something else. What can I replace in this moment that gets me what I want? And often people are lonely and they go on social media to feel less lonely. And it's like, great, if you're lonely, what can we do to address that loneliness? And maybe go to a cafe and try to talk to somebody. I'm amazed at like, go to cafes, like most people are on a device. I'm on a device too. But as soon as you drop your device and actually have a conversation with somebody, everybody's so hungry to have a conversation often. Not a long one, but a short one. Like, hey, how's your day been? Or what's going on with you? Or like, and it's like, everybody kind of like brightens up. Like, we're so lonely and we're so afraid to just say like, yeah, I'm lonely, can we talk? And so I try to do that throughout my life, is just like try to have a conversation with a random person, whether it's standing in line or even the waiter or waitress, just like a human connection, like, how are you doing? And I think we can all do that. And then that just like feeds this other energy of like we, and I think we're in this culture of me and me, and how do I get mine, and how do I move my thing forward, and how do I advance and get more followers or whatever it is. And this whole space of we is actually such a better resting place to live from. So that would be my inquiry. It's like, how do we live from a place of we?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious about, you know, something that you bring to your story is this time that you spent walking and hitchhiking around America and Asia. And yet you were an early investor in ChatGPT. And so you have been very connected to technology. And I'm wondering, as a person who came from like serenity and mindfulness and meditation practice, how you approached technology or, you know, what was it that was so interesting to you?
You know, I've always been interested in, how do we live wisely within whatever the emergent theme is of that day? And so for me, it's like, it was wonderful. Oh, if we all could live in the time of Jesus or Buddha or whatever, it's like, yeah, but the same teachings are here now, you know, like, it's not like the air is any different that we breathe than whatever great spiritual teacher breathes. So for me, the challenge is, or the opportunity is, how do we integrate it into our like life right now with all these gadgets and all these things? So I've just always been amazed at just the incredible potential for human connection and sharing of information that technology brings. I still am. I'm amazed at what ChatGPT could do. Like, I ask it these questions and it comes up with these answers. I'm just like, it's mind blowing. So I'm still in that exploration land of like, what's the right balance for me, and when do I go to AI or ChatGPT or Claude, and when do I not go to that? So that continues to be an exploration. But I do think there is a development that we want to continue to advance technology and solve health issues and provide more information to people. So I think all of that is happening. And the technological companies have great PR. So it's not like we don't understand the benefits of technology. Like, they do a really good job of making sure that we know all the benefits of technology. And part of the reason I wrote my book is like, we don't have as good a PR for reminding people all the benefits of just human intelligence and human connection and human love. That does not have as good a PR system or nearly like a marketing budget that the one has. So I think this is our dance. Our dance is to live in both of these worlds and to live with this question of like, how do I live a full, meaningful, purposeful life using technology, the wisdom of technology, and then using the wisdom of my own being. So for me, you know, all of it is just like a dance and the mystery. And I do feel like there's a power of it, the world that we potentially could create that has amazing technology and amazing humanity, you know, makes me very excited.
Well, Soren, one of the things you write about, which I think is so great in terms of this creating this balance, is the idea of consuming less and digesting more. And yeah. I've been trying to do that without, instead of just scrolling through the phone and you read the headlines and you make this, I make this assumption that, oh, I know what they're talking about. Or I don't. I really yeah. don't. So now I just take that time to find maybe a couple of articles that actually mean something to me or the world. And if I can, read it in a physical magazine or yeah. in a physical newspaper. How can that help us be more mindful?
Yeah, it's a great question. So one of the things I realized, and I actually think podcasts are really good for this, where you actually get to get into a topic and you get to digest it. I sometimes say that social media is a bit like, you know, screaming some like really wonderful, important teaching to somebody who's sprinting by you at the top of their speed. So do they hear it? Maybe. It's a great message, but they're just sprinting as fast as they can. So, or, you know, trying to like throw seeds on concrete, like it might land, but it might not land. And so the information is there, the information might be great, but the quality of attention that that person has might not allow it to really be digested. And so when we're in this more addictive place with technology, it's just a little dopamine hit, a little video, a little post, and we're not truly taking it in. So my encouragement with people is to just find quality content that you can actually digest and take the time to do that. And if you're bored or lonely, try to be with that bored or loneliness versus like instantly going to your phone and thinking that some new TikTok video is going to like solve your, it takes you away from the loneliness for a moment. So it does help with distraction, but it doesn't help with you coming to terms with like, wow, why am I lonely like right now? What's going on? How do I actually meet that need? So I think those are great examples of just like, what kind of food do we want to digest? Do we want to digest like sugary food that has like a quick hit, but doesn't really nurture us? Or what are the podcasts? What are the books? What are the more like the movies, videos that we can absorb that we really actually take in? And I think we've gotten into this like, culture where we just like take in like an hour worth of little videos on TikTok or Instagram, and you ask the person, so what did you learn the last hour? Or tell me what, it's like we have no answer to that question. Or even what video did you see the last hour? Like ask our team. They can't like barely even tell you, right? So it's just this world in which there's information, but there's no digestion. So I think that's great to really ask like, how do I actually find meaningful content I can digest?
Well, and this also goes into my next question of paying deep attention. What does that mean to you? And how can we foster that deep attention? Because I think most of us, you know, you're driving down the road, you've got your radio going, you're probably texting somebody, you know, yeah. through Siri, thinking that you're paying attention to the road, but you're really yeah. not. What yeah. is deep attention?
Yeah, there's a phrase, I think it's called partial continuous attention that somebody coined, where it's just like we're partially continuously attending and our attention's back and forth in so many different ways. One of the things I think is great, Katie, is like we only have one moment to live, and that moment is always now. And that's really hard to argue with. It's like this is the only moment we have. Like truly, this is the only moment we have. We have memories of the past, we have ideas of the future, but like this is the moment that we're have. And to what extent are we fully showing up for this moment, the only moment we have? And to what extent are we showing up like 10% because our attention is just not there? And you see kids come home from school and it's just like, there's such a different experience when that parent just like says, hi honey, welcome home, with like 100% attention, like received, felt. They see if their child needs something, they can attune, they're there. Versus like glancing up for the phone for like 2 seconds, like, oh, hi. They're both highs, but one has such a deeper power of presence than the other one. And I think most of us know that and most of us feel that, and we can offer that and bring that into the world. And I think, you know, for me, it's just remembering like, oh, my attention really, really matters. How I receive this person in this moment really, really matters. And can I prioritize that? So for me, I think it's such a great question, because to the extent that we can bring that and people can offer it to us, it's like the Thich Nhat Hanh, a great Buddhist teacher, said, the greatest gift you can give somebody is your attention. as your presents, which is true. Imagine like friends who give you all these gifts. They can like write you big checks or buy plane tickets or whatever. But like, would you take any of those gifts more than their like full presence that when you need them, they're like completely there for you? And so I think that's a great reminder. It's just like, how do we bring our full presence into life and not let our phones keep us from that on a whatever kind of dopamine hit that we have? Like, can we really, really prioritize, like, what does it actually mean to be present? And I think, you know, studies will show that like you're happier, you're more connected to other people, you live longer. There's like all these benefits to just really being awake to life.
It keeps coming back to me why our baristas and the cashiers at the grocery store are some of the people in our lives that we speak with the most. When you talked about isolation and loneliness, it's like, yeah, that's why those people are so important in our lives, because yeah, they can't do anything else. They can't be checking their phones while
they have to look at us.
Yeah.
Until the robots come. But I think some people go to cafes just to have that connection with another human being.
Yeah.
Isolated and lonely, and you go and there's somebody who looks you in the eyes. And so it's like, great, I'll pay $10 for this coffee or whatever it is.
Exactly. So we do need to start small. You know, it's a big thing that you're talking about. It's big, mindfulness and attention and focusing, but you know, start small, avoid checking your phone in social settings. We've all had it happen before where we're engaged in a conversation and either we or the person we're talking to, you know,
their changes everything. It changes everything.
In their pocket and they can't not check it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's like, it shows you where their values are, or it presents like, this is interesting to me, but if something else is coming through, and why is it that we think just because something coming through on the digital, it trumps what's actually happening in the analog? And the digital could be something stupid, like some, like, you know, I get text messages all the time that says like, buy this new whatever, whatever. Like, I don't even know who it is or what they're selling me. Like, but if my phone rings, that trumps this connection with a friend, even though I have no freaking idea what that message is. It's just like, oh, it's coming from technology. It must be really important. And I think we live in this world of like, wow, we're afraid and we're worried something's gonna happen to somebody. And if we don't check our messages constantly, a friend is gonna die or a child's gonna, like, it's like, really, do we really wanna live our life hooked into this thing where we constantly have to check it so we feel safe? And so it becomes a bit of like a tool that really doesn't serve us. And so I think that's a beautiful practice, is just to let your phone beep or to turn off the notifications. One of the things I do when I'm meeting with a friend is, if we're meeting from, let's say, 2 to 3, I just set an alarm at 3 p.m. or whenever I have to leave. So I don't have to look at my watch, I don't have to look at my phone. I can just be fully present. And then the alarm goes off at 3. I'm like, oh, I gotta go to this next call. But I try to use technology so I can not have to look at technology as much.
Yeah. Oh, what a beautiful idea. Well, Soren Gordhammer, we're out of time. We'd love to talk to you all day. In fact, can you just come to Park City?
Sure.
And hang out with us?
That'd be great. I would love to.
The book is The Essential, Discovering What Really Matters in an Age of Distraction. We're so happy that you could spend this time with us today, undistracted, all of us.
I only check my phone twice. No, I'm joking. You know, I think if anybody leaves, it's, how do I show up fully in this moment?
Yeah.
It's a great inquiry. And no judgment. Like, maybe it's the phone that needs your attention. But most often, there's somebody around us that needs our love and attention. And to what extent can we offer that and receive that?
Soren, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak.
And I'm Katie Mullally.
Here on Cool Science Radio, we love to talk about emerging technologies and new advancements that allow people to live better lives. Our guest today is orthopedic surgeon Dr. Safa Kassab, who has just performed a surgery considered a major milestone in outpatient orthopedic surgery. It's a total knee replacement, which many of us here in the area are all too familiar with, but there's a new twist on it. Dr. Safa Kassab is a former chief of surgery at Trinity Health Oakland in Pontiac, Michigan. And the new procedure is being transformed with new augmented reality navigation system. Dr. Kassab joins the show to tell us more. Welcome, Dr. Kassab.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me.
Well, we know that augmented reality has been used, I don't know how long, but it's not necessarily something new to be used in different types of surgery. But can you tell us the history of how it's been used in orthopedic surgeries?
Right. So it's been used in surgery, you're right, for a few years. I mean, it's relatively new, obviously, in the digital age as we've had it. And in orthopedic surgery, it's relatively new. It's been probably 5 to 7 years. And again, it keeps iterating and getting better. And so therefore, so the augmented reality system is able to overlay images onto the real world. And we can talk about what augmented reality is versus, say, mixed reality versus virtual reality, which, you know, we kind of all know about.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. You know, when these technologies were emerging about virtual reality, we would have, with the Sundance Film Festival in town, a lot of kind of these cutting edge things, and you could go in and learn what it's about and experience virtual and augmented reality. But that's been a little while. So remind us what it is. What is augmented reality versus virtual?
Right. So it's probably easier to start with virtual reality. That's something we could walk into the electronics store and buy, like an Oculus headset or an Apple, you know, virtual reality headset. And what that is just like it sounds, it's in a completely virtual world. It's not tied to the real world at all. And it's completely immersive. So augmented reality takes kind of the digital aspects of certain data or information and overlays it on the real world. A perfect example, or really a clear example of this, is, you know, when we all watch the sports, you know, games, and we see markings on the fields, the first down line that they draw on the field and all the different graphics, that's an augmented reality image. And so therefore they're projecting kind of a digital image onto a real world image, which is the field. Mixed reality is kind of in between the two. So it takes actually a virtual image, which is usually created for, like in surgery, from an advanced study, like a CAT scan or an MRI. And then they mix that into the real world. So it's kind of cool because then you can kind of see through bone. You can actually see tumors. You can work around blood vessels in a virtual kind of environment as you're looking at the surgical field. And that's a mixed reality system. So augmented reality, in this case, we'll talk about the total knee, projects kind of a digital image onto the surgical field as we're working.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're having a conversation with Dr. Safa Kassab. He is an orthopedic surgeon who is on the front lines of using the new augmented reality navigation system for total knee replacements. Well, Dr. Kassab, tell us about how knee replacements have been done in the past. I mean, I had mine replaced 14 years ago. I was in the hospital for 3 days. I had friends that had theirs done last year, and it was outpatient. That's a big jump right there. But what have been the past, let's say over the last 10 years, the procedures for replacing the knee?
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's funny, you're right. We used to count our length of stay in days. Now we count in hours. Pretty soon in minutes, I'm sure. It's crazy. And you're right. So it's a great question, because if you think about, you know, and most people don't want to think about how a total knee is performed. No. But when we perform a total knee 10 years, 14 years ago, it was, you know, mechanical instruments. And to this day, the majority of total knees are performed with mechanical instruments. And it looks kind of crude, but it works. So you put a rod in the thigh bone, let's say, and then you put another reference kind of jig on top of that. And that's a fixed angle. And you kind of, the two create an angle. It works. It's the way it was done. As technologies have evolved and allowed us to kind of incorporate them into surgery, what we can do is take those kind of same principles, but do it digitally. So for instance, in this augmented reality system by Pixee Medical, we're able to take a hip through a range of motion, find what's called the hip center, meaning the mechanical axis. So instead of putting a rod inside your bone to just arbitrarily choose an angle, we actually know the angle of your femur, of your thigh bone. And then we can digitally dial in angles for that match your anatomy. So it's a little more personalized, a lot more precise, obviously. And so those advancements, you know, have been kind of, and they just, I mean, so you look at Pixee Medical, for instance, they got FDA approval in 2022 for this augmented reality system, and it's already iterated twice into the more advanced system than when we just used a couple weeks ago.
So you're still putting the same hardware, or let's just say updated hardware, you know, the knee, the kneecap, all of those parts. But with the system that you're using, if I understand this right, it actually makes it more precise and faster. Is that right?
And less invasive, right? So imagine putting a rod in the bone. We take the rod out, obviously, when we're done, but you violated that bone, and there's bleeding afterwards. And again, there's nothing wrong with that. That's how total knees have been done for, you know, probably since the day we started. But yes, a lot more precise, a lot more accurate. And the goal, you know, I think once someone I heard put it best, any of these tools or technologies, really the goal is to get a good, functional, pain-free total knee. And there are many ways you can get there. Obviously, less invasive, more accurate, more precise is the goal. You know, if you can do it that way, that's ideal. But yes, it's actually, you're right. The implants haven't changed and they work. We have great results with the present implants and they work. It's just techniques are changing.
So prior to the onset of using augmented reality to do total knee replacements, the precision and the accuracy, you know, couldn't be the degree to which it is now. And how would that, you know, what were some of the things that would happen with a total knee replacement that, you know, was a result of things that couldn't be helped?
Right. And so it's one of the unfortunate statistics with total knees, and you look at it, is that, you know, about 15, depending on the literature, 15 to 20% of patients are not happy with their total knee. And I'm sure, you know, everyone knows someone. And unfortunately, you know, we think that that could be a result of probably improper placement. It could be a result of many factors, you know, patient factors, surgeon factors, environmental factors. But that, so in that sense, if we can get more accurate, more precise, ideally, we'd have better outcomes. And, you know, we haven't talked about robotics, but all these technologies like robotics, even before the augmented reality systems, again, try to improve that. And studies do show they're more accurate, more precise. The outcomes are yet to come, you know, to see how the patients actually perform and whether these implants do better than they did before.
So we're talking to you today about Pixee Medical's newest generation of the augmented reality, and you had done about 1,000 knee replacements with the previous generation. Can you talk about how it's changed from the previous generation to this one that I think you just started using in this month, right?
Yes, absolutely. And you're right. So we've done 1,000 in the last 2 years. The difference, the big difference is, you know, there's voice control, the higher resolution camera so that you get more accuracy. But the biggest difference is that we're able to do what's called a digital resection. So again, when we replace the knee, we're really just resurfacing the ends of the bone with metal and plastic, and we're taking off millimeters. So a millimeter is 1/20th of an inch. I mean, that's the kind of accuracy we're working with. And so with this digital resection, we're able to be that precise, to be within a millimeter. It's actually sub-millimeter accuracy with regards of how much bone we're taking off, the angles, you know, that we can determine. And so this newest version has what's called digital resection, again, voice controls and a higher resolution camera, which allows us to be a lot more accurate and precise in surgery.
So we here in Park City, we are used to everyone we know having something replaced other than Lynn. She might be the only person I know that doesn't have a joint replaced. But you're in Michigan. How much of a need is it for it there? And I guess this is just my small mind thinking that only us that have worn out our knees are the ones needing these kind of replacements. But if you're developing this kind of technology there, there's obviously a need. Tell us about the need.
Huge, right? I mean, it goes back 50 years ago when most of us were born, and, you know, and then some. I mean, the baby boomers are here, and, you know, so there's a huge need. I mean, there, you know, literature and studies have been shown that you know, knee replacements, it's good for us, I guess, as orthopedic surgeons, but for the general population, like a 600% increase in the next 10 to 20 years. And the need for joint replacement. And that has to do with the population, you know, the aging population that's coming into the country. You know, just in America alone, we do close to 800,000 knee replacements a year.
I mean, wow.
Yeah, I know. And if you think across the world, so this is an international company, you know, with these technologies. And it's life-changing. And Katie, as you said, that, you know, it's you know, when patients are in pain, and not functioning at the level they want to function. It's a life-changing procedure. Any joint replacement can be.
Well, in the article about this new procedure, it's talking about the portability of it and how it can be used in ambulatory surgical centers. Tell us about it, because I mean, when I had mine done, rolled into this big hospital room with all of the big equipment, What does this look like now? And really, truly, is it portable? And can you take it into downtown Detroit and some of these other areas that probably need good surgeons?
So it moves with us, and I'm not exaggerating. It's the size of a glass case. I mean, it's a pair of glasses. It's really a pair of glasses with a camera on the outside. So it's extremely portable. And I think that's a big difference, right? So other technologies are big and bulky. And again, they work, but a robot, for instance, that's a fixed piece of equipment usually. I mean, it can move, but it's not easy to move that. And you're definitely not moving it out of the institution it's in. You can move it from one room to another. This is completely portable. I mean, the 1,000 cases that we've done, many a times those glasses travel with me from one center to another where we do the surgery. There's a small pan of instruments. It's probably about 6 inches by 10 inches that, you know, houses the markers that we use. And that's the way it works, is you put markers onto the bone and the glasses read those markers. And again, through those markers, they're able to give us these kind of digital information, which is overlaid on the surgical field. So as I'm looking at the patient's knee, I'm also seeing a lot of information in my glasses.
Dr. Kassab, to me, there's something calming, I don't know, that feels good about knowing that it's an actual human that would be replacing my knee with the help of technology. And I don't even know to what degree with total knee replacements or partial even, you know, robotics are used. And so I'm just wondering if you could comment on sort of the interplay between someone like you, the orthopedic surgeon, being replaced by AI robotics, or how much something like using augmented reality will help you keep your job and help you doing, gosh, a couple a day, it seems like, by if my quick math is right.
Couple a day? We do, well, a couple every day, but we usually do 6 to 8 in a day.
Whoa.
And other days are office days. But it's a good question. I mean, these are enabling technologies, right? They enable the surgeon to do the work they need to do. We're not there, obviously. I mean, you're always going to need your surgeon to kind of guide this regardless, right? It's that human factor always has to be there. And I never forget, I'm always working on another human being, and that, you know, that accuracy and everything else. If something, I don't care what the instruments say, if something doesn't feel right, it needs to get changed and adjusted. So I don't think we're going to be taken out of the picture. I just think it's going to help us do our job better. I mean, and again, just our goal is to provide patients with the best results that we can. So I just think it just enables us to do that.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel better about my upcoming someday in my life knee replacement. Okay. So Pixee Medical is, you know, one of these companies that is working on constantly upgrading the current generation of the augmented reality. What do you see in the future, or what do you as an orthopedic surgeon, you know, at the end of your eighth surgery, knee replacement in the day, you say, oh, it'd be really great if we could add this feature to it?
I mean, there are like technical things, like we call it ligament balancing, and, you know, to get it to the point where we can get like very consistent, perfect results every time. I think that the next level, the augmented reality system is great. A mixed reality system, you know, is even better, because again, you mix kind of like studies and those digital images, and you can actually incorporate it into the real world image. You know, the consistency, I mean, and I think, again, when you look at the results of total knees, I really do believe that if we can, you know, I've done this for a very long time, you know, a couple decades, I like to think I can be very consistent, but I'm human as well. And so I understand that it's one case at a time. And so if I had something, a tool that allowed me to be consistent and almost perfect every time, I mean, I think that's where we're going, right? That we can get those consistent results regardless of which, you know, who we're working on.
Well, Dr. Kassab, your lucky patients in Michigan get to use this technology, and you. I have people here in Utah in my life that are getting ready for total knee replacements. Will they be able, or will their surgeons be able to use this? When do you expect to see a rollout for this, for, you know, nationwide?
So it's available now. It's obviously, there's a demand for it, and there is a sales force. And full disclosure, I'm not representing Pixee or anything else. And I don't have any financial relationship with them at this time. So, but it is available to them. But honestly, I would caution, Katie, that your surgeon, I would talk to your surgeon and let them choose what's best in their hands. I mean, if you put a tool that I've never used in my hands to do a total knee, you probably don't want me doing your total knee. So I would ask them, you know, have that honest conversation with the surgeon. I get that all the time. The patients come in with all kinds of Google paperwork and, you know, that they've done research on, and what about this and what about that? And it may be valid, but again, you want your surgeon to do what they're comfortable with.
So you've used this for knee replacements and total hip replacements. Do you see this technology useful for other surgeries?
Absolutely. So they haven't developed a total hip, at least Pixie hasn't, but they are working on a shoulder model at this point. And that one is a mixed reality model. And again, to understand that is, you know, you get say a CT scan or an MRI scan. And as you're looking at the shoulder, you actually can take your hand and spin it around and look at the backside of the shoulder without ever turning the patient as you're working on the patient, and that's coming. And so, yeah, absolutely. Shoulders, spine. I mean, they're already working on, they already have a working mixed reality spine, which again, you obviously don't want to miss with a screw in the spine. And so yeah, you want to be able to see all the, you know, neurological elements and nerves and spinal cord and everything else. So that's all, you know, it's actually here. It's like everything else in technology. It's just a matter of rolling it out and making it accessible to everybody.
Dr. Kassab, I don't expect you to know this statistic at all, but, you know, I think those orthopedic surgeons here in Park City are probably pretty renowned, and they do a great job, and they, you know, it's a great place to live, so it attracts a lot of wonderful medical professionals. I'm wondering if you have any idea how many in the field, you know, in terms of percentage, are using augmented reality to perform these.
I mean, probably not many, honestly, Lynn, only because it hasn't been available for that long. And there's probably one or two systems. Pixie's probably the most popular, and they've gotten FDA approval for the last couple of years. But I bet you your surgeons use some sort of robotics or other technologies. I almost can guarantee you that, because robotics and orthopedic surgery has been around for a little while, longer than augmented reality. A lot of people got trained on that, and so therefore they use it. And again, that offers precision and accuracy as well. And there are several companies that make the robot. Actually, all the big implant companies have robotic surgeries.
Okay. And in terms of the marketplace, does Pixie have competitors?
They do. I mean, as you would imagine, right? There are other companies, smaller companies. There is one other implant company, So they make the implant, but they also have an augmented reality system. But most of the big implant companies don't have an augmented reality system. They're all kind of independent companies that just have the technology and are kind of marketing it. There aren't many. I mean, it's a handful, if there are any.
Well, Dr. Kassab, how did you get hooked up with this company to start this new technology?
Yes, that's a great question. So honestly, I am a little bit of a tech nerd, and I say that kind of lightly. So I was reading an article about an Italian small series that used Pixie, and I reached out as a cold call email to Sebastian Henry, who is just a genius engineer who has worked in med tech for a long time, medical technology. And I just said, hey, if this ever becomes available in America, let me know. I'd love to use it. I do a lot of total knees. That was in March. And he said, as it happens, we're going to probably get FDA approval in April. That was a couple of years ago. And the rest is history. I actually trained virtually initially, meaning that they were in France. I was in America. We did kind of a virtual training on a what's called a sawbone, like a demonstration model. And I saw the effectiveness of it there. And I said, okay, let's go ahead. And you know, the rest is history, like I said. But it's important to say too, I've done this consecutively for the last 2 years on every patient we've had what's called a primary total knee on that we've done a total knee on. So we've had no real exceptions to it.
And so as of, was it May 6th, you've done, or it was May 15th, it was May 6th, you did the first knee replacement using this system. Have you done additional replacements using this system, and what have the outcomes been?
I mean, I'm almost afraid to tell you the number. We've done 40 since then.
Wow. That's great.
I know. So I should just tell you, my practice is only knee replacement. So it's a unique practice. And the outcomes are great. I don't know if I can say it, but interesting, on social media, our very first patient commented on our post on social media announcing this release. And at 13 days, she said, this is her words, I'm climbing stairs and taking care of my 86-year-old aunt. And this was on her post on our social media press release.
Wow. Well, That's great. And what an interesting advancement this is, and so much fun to talk about this emerging technology with you. Dr. Safa Kassab is our guest and talking to us about this newest generation of augmented reality that helps him perform, quite numerous knee replacements. Dr. Kassab, thank you so much for joining us today on Cool Science Radio.
Thank you both, Lynn and Katie. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio here on KPCW Park City. Thanks to our guest today, Soren Gordhammer, in the first half, and his book, The Essential, all about bringing ancient wisdom into the age of technology, balancing things, learning how to be where you want to be and not distracted. It's a good lesson for us all. And then Dr. Safa Kassab with augmented reality, helping him perform knee replacements, and some more new emerging technology coming this way, currently used in Europe, but not so widely used here in the States. But hopefully we'll be seeing some more of that. And tune in next week to Cool Science Radio. We seem to be on a little theme here. Then our guest next week is Richard Simon, who talks about digital detox and what he did for a whole year, which was breaking up with his smartphone, and went in to find out, you know, what would happen. Would his life fall apart? So the result is in his new book, Unplug, How to Break Up with Your Phone. Tune in for that at 9 o'clock next Thursday. And then a conversation about the real age of groundwater and the long journey of snowmelt and what it does before it leaves the mountains. It's not just in the runoff that we get it right into our waterways. So very interesting. Stay tuned for that, or tune in for that next Thursday.